All right, how's that for audio? Okay. Alice, do you want, I don't know, move one way or another, so. Just so I can see you. Okay, I will go around and greet people on Zoom, and then in the Zendo, people will introduce themselves and will repeat their name. So I'll start with Ingrid. Christina. Karen. Mark. Paulette. Pat. Vin. Amelia. Etzido. Mary. Bob. Phil. Melissa. Camille. Dave. Sabrina. And Ruthann.
Dave.
Vikas.
Kazu.
Alice.
Leah.
Jim. Judith. And Domio. Right. Last day to sign up for a term student program. That starts next Saturday. Precep study starting end of March. Jukai ceremony Sunday, June 5th. I did reserve dates. I don't have them in front of me, but I reserved dates for an in-person session at a retreat center for March 2023. I believe it is the third week. So I will be sending out those dates so people can save them. And I figure we will just make it happen. We do have some protocols now, right? Even if COVID's bad, vaccines and tests and masks and blah, 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 or have some stuff outside. I can't imagine too much of that during March. But we did a ways back, we looked around at lots of different retreat centers, and we have to find just the right thing, right? It's just a space big enough for like a meditation space and privacy, nobody else can be there so that we have some silence and decent sleeping quarters and not too expensive, right? Not too fancy and expensive. So I was hoping for something in 2022, but I at least jumped on March 2023. And then we had identified March as actually a good month to have our annual session. It's kind of a, in between. It's not the summertime when people are traveling. It's not the holidays. It's somewhere in between. So from then on out, theoretically, we'll just have it in March and something that people can count on. So stay tuned for that. Any questions or other things that I should announce? All right. So this is my last challenges in Zazen talk. So today I planned, so we have already if you're just dropping in for the first time today, I've already covered certain topics, and you can find them either recordings of the last few Sundays' talks on our Bright Ways End website. I've done two Zen Studies podcast episodes now on physical discomfort in Zazen. So if you're curious about that. So physical discomfort, drowsiness and dullness, perseverating on mental and emotional troubling situations, negative thoughts, troubling emotions and depersonalization we've already talked about. So today I'm going to talk about Makyo, which I will define in a moment, what I'm calling blender mind, which is just thoughts just running through your head, almost random, just thoughts running through so fast there's something vaguely unpleasant just because it is so so fast and random and out of your control. Boredom and frustration with your meditation, whether it's frustration with yourself or frustration with the method or both. So I will, so I tried to make this list that I've already covered and that I'm finishing today more or less exhaustive, but you know, let me know if there's something that didn't make it on this list. I think I wanted to make this list essentially things that make it less likely for you to want to sit, whatever that is. So if I miss anything during the Q&A session or something, go ahead and mention it. And also just be sure, at least it applies at all times, but certainly when we're talking about these different experiences during meditation, I really recommend just doing your own practice and not comparing yourself to others or to even to any kind of idea about how things are supposed to be. Because there's not too many, Makyo in particular, which I'll explain, not too many of these things are things that, you know, if you hear somebody else experiences, you go like, oh, I wish I had that experience. But, you know, comparing mind, you know, I don't experience that, but they do, or anything like that, is just not helpful. We are all so different, and there's no accounting for what our experience during meditation is like. Everyone's experience is very different. So, Makyo is a kind of a catch-all term for weird stuff that happens during meditation for some people. I have no idea how common it is. I don't get a sense that it's very common. I don't know, maybe 10% of people, but it may be an occasional thing. So these include things like, you know, mild hallucinations. A lot of times people describe like seeing weird shapes on the wall or in the, you know, carpet or something, or yeah, kind of visual hallucinations or other kinds of hallucinations like smells. I knew a guy who'd smell dog poop and he would sit, which is like, oh, that's so like the smells, other kinds of perceptions. Sometimes it's energetic disturbances. It's, you know, buzzy feelings or twitchiness or, and that's occasionally, I'm not sure whether this is technically included in this category, but I would include involuntary physical movements or something that sometimes people experience, just like, you know. So these can be kind of disturbing experiences, but also just a little bit fascinating too, right? Like, what's going on? So sometimes people think, depending on how it's manifesting, they think something special is going on. Like, I must be onto something, right? This weird thing is happening. That they're attaining something in Zazen. And what it can mean is that you have developed a fairly deep level of concentration, perhaps, in your meditation, for what that's worth, which in a way is not even what we're looking for in Shikan Taza, right? So a deep level of concentration can sometimes, you know, bring about just, you know, essentially it's just a shift in consciousness and the way that your body mind is functioning, and certain phenomena can come out. Or frankly, sometimes this is a sign that you're sitting more than you're ready to sit. Now, for most of us, most of us are not in any danger of ever approaching that. And by sitting a lot more than you're able to take, in particular, I mean by yourself. Maybe in the context of a meditation retreat, you know, there's other people around, there's a teacher to talk to, so then if anything interesting starts to happen, you have a context for it, you have somebody to support you, you have somebody watching out for you. But it's not, it's somewhat uncommon, but it's definitely not unheard of for some folks to just, I don't know, they just jump into the practice with both feet and they're like, all right, let's do this meditation stuff. And they just sit for hours a day by themselves. And I think this is very impressive in a way. And in many cases, probably is no big deal. But sometimes it can just, I guess, without that social support, without the context of the larger tradition of Sangha, of teachers, of whatever, then you can go some weird places. If you haven't, so Zen masters throughout history have warned against getting excited about Makyo. So basically the response is, if you go to, you know, I've been like having one of these experiences, the teacher is just going to be like, all right, you know, all right, no big deal. Like, let's adjust meditation maybe so that's less likely to happen. But it's not a big deal. It's not like, ooh, wow. You know, it's not something to be celebrated. It's actually something to be let go of as soon as, I mean, sometimes it's not voluntary, right? It continues, but to let it pass as soon as it's willing to pass, because it's not a sign we're on the right track. It's not a sign that we're on a terrible track either, but it's not something to be like further explored, further developed, aiming to intensify it. Because it can get a little fascinating, I suppose, like maybe hallucinatory drugs or something, that you can get a little people, but on the flip side, you could get a little obsessed with trying to explore it, but you could also get a little fearful of it, right? You could get like, oh my God, I'm afraid that's going to happen when I sit again. And so it helps to have, you know, someone to talk to, some context to say, it happens, not unheard of. It's happened throughout this history of meditative traditions, you know. And then I'm going to talk to us about a few things that you can do to kind of ease the likelihood that that happens. So if it does happen, if you haven't experienced any of this, don't worry about it. You don't want to, right? But we're all wired differently. So if you have, talk to a meditation teacher. Probably a meditation teacher of just about any tradition is going to be familiar with this kind of thing. But hopefully don't worry too much about it. Know what happens to others. Know that this too shall pass. Try to kind of endure it and allow it to pass. One, so each of us is wired differently, and there's each experience of this is different. And some of these phenomena, I think, can occur together with what I talked about last week, which was depersonalization, this kind of, that's like a dissociation from the yourself, your conventional self, your emotions, thoughts, body. So some of these things might come up in that context, in which case then, you know, refer to the depersonalization issue. But when it's really just a weird sensory or physical phenomenon, one general tip is to try to ground your meditation. So I am no expert in body energy flows or anything like that, and I'm a little agnostic when it comes to them. I'm like, I don't know, you know. Maybe there's something to it, maybe there's probably is, but I'm not in, you know, totally into it. But generally speaking, you want, Makyo tends to happen when your energy is too much up in your head, just to use this kind of language. It's almost like your concentration and your focus is right on your, you know, and often even between your eyebrows, and like, and that's kind of, I feel like, I don't know if it is or not, but it's almost like it's messing with your brain, right? It's messing with your perceptions. And so what you want to do is try to, you know, sink your focus and your energy, however that makes sense to you, down in the body, even down into the ground, if that resonates with you. Traditionally, Zen folks talk about the hara, which is, it's just like a spot in the abdomen. It's below your belly button. It's like a place you can't actually put any tension, but it's like a certain energy center that's deep down in the belly. So kind of imagining that being your focus of meditation, that being your, rather than kind of concentrating up here, can help ease some of that. And also just grounding your meditation in a psychological sense, reminding yourself that you are seeking to wake up to the here and now, not work into some kind of transcendent state or break into some kind of alternative transcendent realm. To kind of settle down, slow down, open your awareness up more. And maybe, you know, maybe sit a little less, depending on how much you've been sitting. You know, incorporate some other kinds of meditation, like walking meditation or something like that. So I will pause there for any kind of questions or comments before I go on to the next topic. Mark.
Just as a comment, I had Makyo for on and off for the first couple of years. In fact, one of the reasons I went to Brightway was so that I could ask Domio what was going on. And it does pass. I haven't had it for many years. I had it just a couple weeks ago for the first time in years. And I was like, oh, this, the light show. There is a weird kind of way you can use your concentration that just sort of dismisses it, I find. And I don't know how to explain that. It's experiential. But yeah, just sort of corroborating, like, yeah, that'll go away.
Nice. Do you mind sharing like what your experience is like?
Sure. It usually shows up as kind of fields of light in almost like aurora borealis, like greens and golds and reds and indigo blue fields of light that just sort of move around almost like a lava lamp. And I find that there's a strange way I can just sort of look through them and they go away.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think visual stuff is quite common, and in a way it's like, you know, your eyes, that even brings up, you know, the question of what you're supposed to do with your eyes, right? I remember feeling like my eyes were really straining at a certain point, and like how to keep the eyes open but gaze soft. I mean, sometimes you can close your eyes instead, but it's good to be able to sit with your eyes open at least sometimes. It helps with alertness and groundedness. But a helpful thing to do is to, if you think about it in terms of you're holding the body still, and then you also want to hold the eyes still. Not that you have to be staring, but just that you're not, you know, looking around, which I usually find, you know, if my mind's going like this, my eyes are, you know, or if I'm kind of concentrating on something, some idea, my eyes go down. If I'm thinking about the future, my eyes go up. So you just think about the position of the eyes and holding them more or less still, but then the gaze should be soft, which is a, if you like, open your gaze up to your peripheral vision and then just let it stay kind of unfocused and soft. That can be very helpful. This is something that you learn to do when you're a birder, because if you open your eyes up, let your gaze up like that, what you see is you're not focused on any particular thing, but you see movement really, you know, really well. That's an aside. Go ahead and try it when you're birding sometime. But anyway, that soft gaze can help with some of the eye stuff that comes up. Alice.
Does macro sometimes happen during session, since it's long?
I would guess probably. I haven't actually been I haven't been the teacher for so many sessions that I, you know, can say the likelihood, but probably. Dave.
So I am a frequent participant in Makyo, and for a long time I didn't know this was something that other people experienced. I didn't know I had a name until you mentioned it, but that happens to me almost always. But I discovered over time that when I would start getting all kinds of weird visual stuff, it's almost always because I've just stopped blinking. Like, I'm sitting there with my eyes kind of 3/4 of the way closed, and I just don't need to blink anymore, so I don't. And I think my eyes are like dry out, and my pupils dilate. And so I found if everything starts freaking out, if I just close my eyes for like 30 seconds and open them again, that clears it up for me. Anyway.
Good deal.
Yeah, could I ask a question? This is Dave Brown.
Yeah.
This has been great for me because just recently my body has been out of control. It's twitching, it moves, the chest will expand, contract. So it really precludes me from ever sitting with anyone else. And I, even eyes open, eyes closed, it will pass. It doesn't bother me too much, but I have to be an antisocial sitter now.
Well, I do remember sitting once in a retreat with, they didn't have Great Bao Zen Monastery yet. They were Zen Community of Oregon. So we were a retreat at a retreat center. And there was a woman there who most of the time throughout the retreat, she was going like this. I mean, like, I don't know how her neck held up, but it was a very dramatic movement. And, you know, I mean, part of me was kind of, you know, like, nobody explained anything to me, like, you know, and I'm like, kind of like, what the hell? And that's annoying. But then, you know, you just modeled, the teachers just modeled, just sit. You know, it's like, we love for things to be still and quiet, but like, we're not, somebody say that's distracting, but that's distracting from what? That's what's happening in the here and now. When what is truly distracting are things that kind of draw our mind or are entertaining, or, you know, like overhearing conversations or something like that. That is what is truly distracting. When something's happening that's kind of just, you know, it's frogs, it's traffic, it's construction noise, it's involuntary movements, you don't have to do anything about them. So theoretically, they don't need to be distracting. All right, anything more? Go ahead.
I kind of echo the same point. I see like kind of, I wouldn't say like strong hallucinations, but like kind of discoloring, if you will, of things. Mm-hmm. Like it happens like not frequently, but occasionally. But I've always thought of that as like if you're just staring at one thing, or you're just like looking at one thing, eventually it becomes like a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. Your mind just like just wants to throw some like watercolors on it. It seems like that.
Yeah. Definitely. All right. Okay, and if you have anything more that you've experienced or you want to talk to me about or anything, feel free to bring it up at another time. Because I know, you know, if it's anything that like kind of puts you off from sitting or that you're worried about, you might want to talk about. So moving on to Blender Mind. So I have no idea how common this is. I have no idea. This is, I don't know, it's a spectrum, right? I mean, we all sit with the thoughts arise in the mind. I mean, even in the depths of session, thoughts are arising. But in the when you're really, really relaxed, you know, you can almost see it arise and then, oh, there's another one. You know, it's like everything slows down. So there's a spectrum all the way from that. And then, you know, somewhere in the between is just normal thoughts arise and you realize you've been thinking about this thing, you're thinking about that thing. And then, you know, you just let go or return to the moment or you're breathing or something like that. But there also is like the very extreme end of this is just, you know, I had this experience when I first started sitting. I can't remember for how long, but it was like my mind is going so fast that the blender is the best analogy that I can think of. The best visual image is just like thoughts and thoughts and thoughts, and they're not, it's not even like a train of thought. It's not even like one, oh, I see, I kind of went off and thought about my grocery list. No, it's just like grocery list, TV show, you know, traffic, itchy knee. It's just, so it can be very, it's obviously, you know, you might fall somewhere in the spectrum there. And my best advice for Blender Mind is just to be patient and endure it, because for one thing, the typical recommendations for helping with wandering thoughts, right? Not recommendations I tend to give, right? Because I tend to encourage shikantaza, but a lot of times people say, well, you know, let go and return to your breath or some kind of directed effort practice. And give it a try. But I think if you have Blender Mind, those things don't really work. I think the mind has so much momentum that those things are, I mean, my experience seriously was like, okay, so I was taught you could count breaths, right? You could count exhalations 1 to 10 and start back at 1 as a way to kind of, you know, settle the mind and keep present. Like, if I got to 2 or 3, that was pretty amazing. I'm talking about, okay, 1. I mean, just, you know, I'm in the middle of a blender. I'm not going to remember to count the second breath. So I would say that over all these years, and hopefully this doesn't sound discouraging, it's more like, you know, when you get a blender going and like once everything is really fine and then like everything kind of slows down and just kind of rotating in the blender jar, mm-hmm. instead of being like this, it's because it's so, now it's so fine. It just kind of, I guess it that's what it feels like for me. So it really, my mind rarely really slows down unless I am in retreat. And like I had to do lots and lots of retreats in order to experience that. And it's very sweet to experience that spacious mind. But the most important thing is I don't care so much anymore. So it's like I think this is, if you're cursed with Blender Mind, it can feel unfortunate, but it also, I mean, everything has its value, because from the very beginning, you realize you're not in control of your mind. And so it's the process of becoming less identified with that mental experience, the experience of the content or the experience of being able to control the content. It's, you just have to endure it and accept it. And I love the, there's a line in Fukan Sazengi, Dogen's instructions for Zazen, where he says, what is it? Basically, do non-thinking. What kind of thinking is that? Not thinking. But I found this wonderful, it always made me a little sad, right? I'm like, never gonna experience that. But I've discovered this wonderful article by a Japanese Sotoshu monk, where he said the word for the not thinking or non-thinking is hishiryo. And I'm not familiar with the characters, but basically he said, like, the best translation of that is, it's not a matter of thinking. It's not the absence of thinking, which this monk points out. He's like, that's just another idea. It's not a matter of thinking. It's not a matter of thinking. It's not a matter of non-thinking. It's like we're looking to identify with something deeper than the thinking or the non-thinking or all of that, or conscious experience. So, you know, if you can't stand Blender Mind and it's gonna make you stop sitting, go ahead and try some directed effort approaches, but I suspect they won't work. But it is a powerful lesson in humility and acceptance, and potentially not self as well, to just, I'm sitting here in meditation, I've chosen to do this, and I have this intention. I have no control over what's happening. And that's actually, there's some real wisdom to be found there. So in a sense, it's like, let it be like the weather or the wind or something that you observe and endure, and then just try to have faith that your sitting's valuable anyway. So any questions or comments about that?
If I don't have much of a space between watching Dune, for example, and coming to meditation, like I did today, and it's like a 20-minute drive for me, turn off the Dune in the middle of the film, get in the car, and come here 20 minutes later. It's all of that stuff. You know, I'm reenacting, and then it goes into other, anything else it can think of, it being my mind, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I think there's a, whatever it is that we experience in meditation, I think it's important to recognize that it's usually associated with something that has pros and cons. So, because what you're saying made me just think about, you know, there's a reason why monks, like full hardcore monks, didn't listen to music, didn't watch entertainment, you know, didn't, you know, have sex. They didn't do anything because, you know, anything we're engaged with seeps in there. Now, you know, we want to live active lives and meditate, but also, like, I tend to feel like my own Blender Mind, for instance, my own difficulty with letting go of thoughts it's just the shadow side of having a very active mind that isn't, you know, a creative mind that's thinking about projects and things that I can do and whatever. So, like, you can't have that without also having kind of a busy mind, and probably, at least the way that it manifests in me. So in a way, we have to just accept that, you know, whatever it is that is an obstacle in Zazen for us is often also part of our strength. Like maybe, you know, maybe you kind of lack ambition in Zazen, but that's probably tied to a certain kind of mellowness in your character that is willing to accept what you have. So, yeah. Did you have something, Alice? Okay. Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Domio, for this. I was just going to comment that I've had, now that you've identified it for me, something called Blender Mind for eons, for as long as I can remember. It's always been difficult for me to concentrate because all of this, they're not even full thoughts, they're fragments. Mm-hmm. I liken it, my analogy is looking over a 8-lane freeway, and you're looking kind of down from an overpass, and you're identifying the vehicles that are coming at you or going away from you. And you're saying, oh, a Ford, a Chevy, a Nissan. Well, that's an 86, that's an 85. And they're just coming so fast, you can't even really grasp what it is that's going by. And that's just a noise, like radio static. That's just in the background. And I'm trying to concentrate on, you know, staying centered, staying seated, you know, being in the moment, and all of this stuff is going by. It's really entertaining, but also very difficult. I feel like sometimes I'm going backwards, but that's another subject. Thank you.
Well, and that's where I just, you know, I advocate that faith that somehow our Zazen is useful, even though it might not seem like it is. And I feel like kind of I can be a poster child for that. But, you know, sometimes when I was sitting in session and like, I mean, so there'll be moments of, you know, stillness of meditation period of stillness, like, yay. And then, you know, it's back and I'd just be thinking, I'm never going to be able, like, I'm just going to be a monk forever, never be, you know, a teacher, never, you know, I'm never going to get this. But, you know, the transformation happens somehow anyway. And I've come to think that, you know, what's consciously happening in Zazen, our sense of whether it's enjoyable or beneficial or anything, it's just a tiny fraction of what's actually going on. Leah.
Yeah, this is definitely me, this whole blender thing, and I'm so glad to hear I'm not the only one. That's really awesome. And sometimes I feel like when I have Blender Mind, it's right before it drops off. Like I'll have just regular, try to settle in, you know. And sometimes I'll have this Blender Mind, but then it's almost like, oh, good, I'm headed for the peace, the drop off. So to me, it's an indicator. It's unpleasant, and it's probably, I don't always, but when I do, it's like, oh, but then sometimes the act of turning off the blender is very distinct for me, so it's almost like kind of a good bet.
So. Yeah, I mean, I have a kind of a similar experience in that when I recognize I've just been sitting there thinking about stuff on the meditation cushion, and what's been working for me lately is to, okay, you know, I've become conscious of that, right? And also it's simultaneously I'm conscious of my intention just to devote this time to letting go as opposed to mulling over all this stuff, to letting go. So I'm okay, there's that, and and there's a part of, helps me to go, who gives a shit? Because, you know, my response to that is like, well, now I'm meditating, I want to meditate. But there's like a deeper part of me that's like, just be here. And then there is this, like, it may not last very long, but there's just this moment of just stillness where the mind is like, who cares? I mean, it doesn't really actually matter, right? We have this idea that somehow the thoughts are bad and we want stillness. Why? I mean, we understand, right? Like, being caught up in our, you know, self-centered dream is not where we want to be. We want to be aware, attentive, right? That's why we want to leap beyond our self-centered thinking. But in a way, we can just get into more self-centered thinking if we're just setting up a duality against thinking and non-thinking, as opposed to just, here we are. All right, well, let me move on to boredom. I would say that boredom is one of the greatest hazards of shikantaza. And by boredom, I mean losing a sense of focus, of purpose, of willingness, of motivation. I mean, it's very hard. Kyogen, one of my teachers, he was great at coming up with accurate but really inelegant metaphors. So he had this metaphor of, like, there's a oily bowling ball in a bucket, and you can't get your fingers in it, right? The just finger holes are underneath it, and you have to lift it out of the bucket. But, like, if you try, it's gonna slip out of your hand, so you have to, like, slowly lift it out. So that kind of, it's like the difficulty of grasping hold of what it is that we're trying to do in shikantaza can be like this. Am I trying to be doing anything? If you're just sitting here and not doing anything, is that it? That doesn't feel quite right. What are we trying to do? And, you know, I mean, and then we make a habit of it and we do it regularly. You know, we just kind of sit without an awareness of the preciousness of this opportunity. So I think what's most important with this kind of experience is just identifying it as part of what's going on for you, as opposed to, you know, if you're bored, here's the cure, right? Like, the cure is going to be probably pretty individual, depending on who you are, where you are, what inspires you. But just noticing, you know, wanting to do something else, being dissatisfied with whatever options you have in front of you, your current experience is uninteresting or even tedious. I mean, it's like boredom is a very interesting human phenomenon. You know, that, like, there's certain times where we could be really relaxed and we're fine with nothing going on and that's fine. But boredom is almost this sense, like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this. I want to be doing something else. Even if I don't know what else would amuse me, So it's a feeling of dissatisfaction. So, I mean, this could manifest in zazen as incessant mind wandering and fantasy, in the sense that our thoughts are just a whole lot more interesting than this boring zazen thing. A sense that our meditation is pointless or purposeless. Disorientation because of the lack of any method. Fantasizing perhaps about a different method. So I did a podcast episode not that far back called 14 Ways to Revitalize Your Zazen. So I had a whole bunch of different ways that you might try, and obviously, you know, just use your creativity in whatever works, right? But, you know, an example is, you know, see what happens. Sit there and see what happens. Remind yourself you've never experienced this before. What is going to happen in this next half an hour? Or imagine you have one day left to live. And this is your last Zazen period, right? In the back of your mind, you're maybe thinking, well, at some point I'll, you know, I'll really settle into this meditation stuff, but whatever. Today I'm thinking like, this is it. This is your last opportunity. But also let's take a complete break. Sometimes that helps me. It's recognizing much of the compulsive thinking and stuff is actually comes from a sense that I have to figure something out. I have to fix something. I have to get something done. It's like, no, you don't. You can just rest right now. What do I not yet see? You know, inspirational Dharma reading or something that you think like, what is complete supreme perfect enlightenment anyway? Or whatever kind of words of the ancient masters inspire, and you recognize you don't really know what that is yet. That kind of thing can inspire. And then the classic thing is contemplation of impermanence. I guess I've mentioned that already, but we have a verse that Zen centers and monasteries often end their day with. Life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life. And then I'm going to just move on into frustration with your meditation because it's a little bit related. So whether you blame yourself or the method or both, I would recommend talking to other practitioners about it, talking to teachers about it, listen to my podcasts. I have numerous ones that are like, isn't that cool? you know, because usually your experience is not other people will relate to it. They might have some interesting, helpful things to mention. One of the koans, one of the challenges and opportunities we have in our current situation in the West, in modern culture, is we have many different options. We have different kinds of Buddhism we can do. We have different kinds of Zen we can do. We have Hindu meditation we could do. We have, you know, all kinds of, we could just do yoga, we could do secular meditation, we could. So that is sweet in the sense that we don't have to stick with the spiritual or religious tradition we're born into, and we get to find something that really resonates. I mean, very few of us were born into Buddhism, right? You encounter it, you're like, this is for me. So that is very a sweet opportunity. But of course, the drawback of that is then we have lots of opportunities and we're like, it can be tempting at a certain point if things get difficult or frustrating, where we go, I don't know, maybe I should do koans, or, you know, I don't know. I'm just sitting here in Zazen for years, and it never seems to, like, get very calm or deep. Maybe I should try that, you know, Hindu breath meditation or some other kind of thing. And I would say, you know, some experimentation and exploration is fine. I'm totally happy if somebody, you know, is sitting with us and then they find something else that really, like, lights their fire and works. That is great. But there is a little, like, Kyogen had an analogy of if you're going cross country, you know, and you get a used car, and when you're halfway across, unless you're going west to east, right? Let's say you're in Montana, and you're like, I don't know. That other car, I think, would have worked better. And then you're going to go back and you're going to go get that guy. Like, at a certain point, you just got to keep going. I mean, no matter what path, what technique you choose, I guarantee it will end up being challenging and frustrating at some point. I mean, if there were truly instant results with some kind of technique or something, then, like, we would know about it, right? Everybody would be doing it. But the fact is, to some extent, at a certain point, once you have a certain resonance and trust, you just commit and keep going. Yeah, I guess I'll leave it there. Any comments or questions? Dave?
I just wanted to make a remark about boredom. Because as you're going through your list of all the various things, frustration, Machio, Beeper, I've done all of those things, except for the boredom part. Because I'll be bored with all that other stuff happening. And whenever anybody asks what practice is like here, I say, oh, we sit here and we do that, and they go, that sounds boring. And I'm like, give it a shot, because that's the one thing that it's not to me, because it's just frustration, sure. But boredom, it's just, you know, there's no room.
Well, and boredom is a real, like, I feel like it's an existential kind of thing. I mean, I actually have a podcast episode coming out tomorrow on wonder, and in a way, boredom's like the opposite of wonder, right? And I argue in that podcast that wonder, you could take the presence or absence of wonder almost as a sign of where your body and mind is. Are you in accord with the Dharma or not? Because, you know, this is our life. It's not somewhere else. What's going to happen? I'm still alive. I'm still able to sit, you know, to be present. It's so, and I'm not saying we judge ourselves when we feel bored, but it is an interesting question. Like, why am I feeling bored with what is essentially just my life? Alice.
I have a weird question. At what point does Zazen break the boundaries of the cushion? Because sometimes, like, I could be doing totally boring stuff, like driving across the country or waiting at the DMV. And I'm like, let's go into Zazen mode. 45 minutes to spare. And then I may not be adopting the same forms as here. Surely someone looking at my eyes blinking and, you know, staring on the ground is a little bit disturbing to some folks. So I can kind of like put myself in that zone out, quiet, let's see what happens, let's see what arises for you. So like, is that normal? Is that discouraged?
Did Zoom people hear the question?
No.
So Alice was saying, you know, what about when you experience some of what you experience in Zazen just out in daily life? You know, waiting in a line, driving on a cross-country trip or something, and there's a certain, you know, go into Zazen mode. And is that like, is that a goal? Is that supposed to happen? Whatever. I definitely think, you know, that we are aiming to take this way of being off the cushion indefinitely. The way that I've heard it described, though, because I think I remember, I don't know where I saw it, but some teacher was being asked, he had a student who was a trucker and did long distance driving, and he said, well, like, you know, I do Zazen while I'm driving. And the teacher's like, no, don't do that. Because what we should be doing is just that. So just like we're just sitting, then we're just driving, we're just standing in line, we're just, I mean, but in a sense, what difference does it make, right? When we are just doing what we're doing, it's a very similar experience. But just like that little bit of a differentiation that we're not necessarily trying to, because there's a certain experience we have in sitting where we're not doing anything. We've set aside all activity. And so there might be a level of stillness that's inappropriate for other activities. So we're not trying to go into some altered state or anything like that. But just, you know, that just washing the dishes, that, you know, just wrestling with your puppy, that just being with your child, it's all ends up being a thread that you can, you know, experience throughout the day. Maybe not constant, right? But at certain times. And that's what's sweet about certain kinds of, you know, what we might call mindfulness activities. Not mindfulness in the sense of trying to cultivate some kind of special concentration, but mindfulness in that sense of really wholeheartedly doing whatever you're doing. And there's good activities for that, right? Waiting in a line, you know, driving when there's not a lot of, you know, traffic and stimulation, or waiting at a red light, drinking your tea in the morning. There's various things you can kind of like, or brushing your teeth, or certain activities, simple activities, you know, washing the dishes, where we can, just as if, you know, we're just doing that activity. Sweet. And was there, did you have some? All right. Well, we're at 12:13, so I will go ahead and do our closing verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Domyo.
Everyone.
Thanks, Domyo.